Barney charged through the door of the kitchen into the back room of the Whiskey Hill kitchen, where the sheriff and Roy Whitworth were seated at the table while Mary refilled their coffee.
Sheriff, one of them folks over near Long Creek is driving a wagon down the middle of town looking for you. He's hauling a dead man in the back of his wagon.
Well, hell. Did he go to the office? Stoney ought to be there.
No, he don't want to talk to Stoney. He wants the sheriff.
J.D. reluctantly got up from the table.
I hope this won't take long.
Mary followed the three men through the kitchen door. As the men left, Pearl joined Mary by the window to see what the commotion was about.
Why, that's Dewey Jenkins.
Pearl and Mary went out the door as well.
Sheriff, he shot my boy. He came into my home and killed my son!
Who did?
One of that murdering scum that works for Frank Drummond. I don't know his name. He just walked in my house and murdered Jeremy, threatened my wife.
He held his hand up to a nasty gash beside his head.
He pistol whipped me. He was looking for that Colt McRae feller. I'm sorry, Pearl, but he might come looking for you.
This was not good news for the sheriff. Drummond had assured him that no one outside the Broken M and the Bar M would be involved in the elimination of Colt McRae. He had gotten word about the hired killer Drummond had brought in, and he had feared he might have to answer some questions from the mayor and the council if some of the trouble spilled over into their little town. He glanced over at Pearl, a questioning look in his eye, wondering what she had to do with it.
I want to know what you're going to do about it, Sheriff.
Well, I'll look into it.
Dewey, I'm awful sorry. Is Vera all right?
My son is dead. How do you reckon she is? She had to tell him you hauled him away from the church. He was going to kill her if she didn't. But she told him you took him to the doctor.
I guess she couldn't help it.
Pearl turned to look at Mary, whose worried expression told her they were both thinking the same thing.
I've got to get him out of my house. They're sure to find out where my place is.
They both turned to glance in the direction of Dr. Taylor's house, half expecting to see the killer coming. Mary pulled Pearl a few steps aside.
I'll go to your house and get Colt out of there. It's best if you stay here where you won't be alone. He doesn't know anything about me, and we can't let him find Colt in your house. Tell Oscar I got sick and had to go home.
Oh, it's my fault for hiding him. I don't want to get you involved. Damn it, I've already got Dewey's son killed.
I'm already involved. I better get going. I can walk to your place in an hour.
Hell, you can't walk. Take my buggy and I'll walk home later. You're gonna need the buggy anyway if you're aiming to take him someplace, because I don't think he can walk.
Unnoticed by the others who were gathered now around the wagon, Mary slipped away toward the stables where Pearl kept her buggy when she was in town.
What are you gonna do about my son's murderer, Sheriff?
I'm gonna look into it. You just go along and take care of your boy.
Look into it? God damn it, Sheriff. There's a mad dog killer loose out there. And you're gonna look into it? Why don't you get up a posse and run the murderer to ground?
The man's right, J.D. We can't have this sort of killer running loose in our town. You need to form a posse and go after this man.
Damn it, Roy. Let me see what's what before we talk about a posse. We don't even know where to look for him.
I expect you wouldn't have to look no farther than the Rockin' D.
Now see, we don't know any such thing. That's why I want to make sure we don't go off half-cocked. We don't know if Drummond had anything to do with the killing.
The hell we don't? Anybody that don't think Drummond's behind all the killing around here is dumber than a fence post.
Bon is right. We've all knuckled under to Frank Drummond for years, but I think this time he's gone too far.
Ain't that the God's honest truth? It took a long time in coming, Mr. Mayor, but damned if you ain't finally said something to make sense.
I think it's time to confront Drummond about this wave of killings, J.D., and this business about a war with the McCrays. I'm ashamed to admit that we've become so blind about Drummond that we're afraid to travel far outside of town to see what's really going on.
J.D. Townsend's worst fears were suddenly being realized. Deathly afraid of crossing Frank Drummond, he had never deceived himself that he was anything but Drummond's man. At the same time, his position as sheriff of Whiskey Hill afforded him some measure of authority. Now this latest escalation of killing had caught him right in the middle, and the town council expected him to do something. He was a hell of a lot more frightened by Drummond than the town council, though.
Now, Roy, we don't want to make more of this than it really is. Like I said, I'm gonna look into it. We don't need to get up a posse just yet. I'll ride out to talk to Drummond about it. Now, you folks go on about your business and let this poor man take his son to the undertaker.
His appetite totally destroyed, J.D. turned and headed for his office. Colt McRae's wound stung with each step that he took on his torturous walk from the bedroom to the kitchen, but it was his rib cage that caused him to flinch. He was convinced now that he had landed so hard when thrown from the buckboard that he had cracked some ribs. But painful or not, he forced himself to move to the kitchen to get the double-barreled shotgun he had seen there. With the shotgun in hand, he checked to make sure it was loaded before letting his body collapse onto a chair at the table. With the weapon lying on the table before him, he sat facing the door. Not more than a minute ago, he had heard a buggy pull up to Pearl's cabin.
It's Mary!
Colt visibly relaxed.
Colt!
What are you doing here?
I've got to get you out of here. The man trying to kill you knows that Pearl brought you from the church. It's just a matter of time before he finds out you're here.
What about Pearl? Is she all right?
I think so. She's going to go over to my house when she finishes work today. I think as long as she's in town, she'll be all right. So far, none of Drummond's crowd knows I'm involved. So let's get you out of here to someplace safe.
I need to get back to my uncle's. My horse. My rifle. I ain't much good without a horse and rifle.
You wouldn't be much good even with them from the looks of you right now. Pearl said you've lost a lot of blood, and we need to get you someplace where you can heal.
I guess you're right. I can hardly keep myself sitting up in this chair. Do you know a place I can hull up for a spell?
I do. My grandmother's.
Mary and Colt's arrival sparked an immediate alarm among the inhabitants of the small gathering of a dozen teepees when the buggy was sighted. For the appearance of a buggy meant white man. Women ran about gathering their children. Old men ran to their teepees to get their weapons. Mary stopped the horse and stood up.
He's sick.
She pointed to Colt. Near the center of the small gathering of Indians, an old woman made her way to the forefront. She stood smiling at the young white woman for a long moment before finally her leathery old face broke into a wide smile.
Oh, little star!
They were quickly surrounded by curious old men, women, and children. Mary stepped down to receive the warm embrace of her grandmother. The old woman's smile was as wide as her wrinkled face, revealing gums with more gaps than teeth. It had been more than 2 years since Mary had visited the tiny village of her grandmother, Walking Woman, and it was obvious by the glow in the old woman's face that she had been missed. Mary explained why she had brought the wounded white man to their village.
Take him to my lodge. There he can rest, and I will make him strong again.
Two of the men helped Colt down from the buggy.
He is a good white man.
Walking Woman was still sad that Mary's mother had married a white man who was not good.
He is a very good white man.
How is your mother? She is still with that man, your father?
Mary nodded.
She should come back to her people.
She spun on her heel and followed after the two men carrying Colt.
Come, we will see about this white man. He is important to you?
Well, in a way. But some bad men are looking for him. I don't know where else to take him.
I'll take care of him. Put him in my teepee!
Inside her teepee, Walking Woman fashioned a bed with several blankets on one side of the lodge.
Put him here.
Feeling helpless in a strange world, Colt lay quietly while the old woman took the bandage off and looked at his wound.
Bullet go in, bullet come out.
I think he's got some broken ribs.
Walking Woman placed her hand on Colt's side and pressed gently.
I'll put some medicine on the wound, heal him up. We'll bind his ribs. He's a strong man. You'll heal quick. I'll search for the herbs he needs.
Where am I? I've got to let my uncle know where I am.
You're not in any shape to do anything right now but get well. You're in Red Moon's village. He's one of the men who carried you in here. He's my uncle. You'll be safe here. This camp is well hidden. Nobody bothers these people.
I thought the Cheyenne fought with the Sioux at Little Bighorn and were on the run from the army. How come these people here are so close to Fort Russell?
When you were outside, did you see any young men? Now, the young men are with Little Wolf. There's no one left here but the women and old men and some children. The soldiers at Fort Russell know that Red Moon's village is still here, but they don't know exactly where, and they don't care. These people are not threats to anyone.
I've got to hurry up and get out of here. I need a horse and my rifle. There's a lot of unfinished business that needs to be taken care of. What about that sorry excuse for a sheriff? Is he doing anything about Drummond?
JD's too scared of Drummond to interfere. You know that.
Damn, I've got to get out of here.
You've got to get well before anything else. I'll get word to your uncle that you're all right. I've got to get Pearl's buggy back to her. You'll be all right here. Walking Woman will take good care of you.
Mary, I don't know how to tell you how much I appreciate what you've done for me. You and Pearl.
You're the first man who's ever really stood up to Drummond. I don't want anything to happen to you. I'll try to get up here tomorrow if I can.
Mary, wait. What if... A man has to... I mean, what if I have to...
Pee?
Yeah, pee.
You go out behind the teepee like everybody else. I think most of the men go in the willows on the other side of the creek. If you can't make it on your own, Grandma will help you.
Oh, I'll make it on my own.
Left alone in this new, strange environment, Colt felt more helpless than before. His contact with Indians had been limited at best. He was left to wonder why this village of Cheyenne would so willingly take him, a white man, in. If the reason was totally due to the fact that Mary was Walking Woman's granddaughter, it still wouldn't explain the cordial reception by the rest of the village. After all, the very land that his uncle and his father had claimed for themselves was once Cheyenne hunting ground.
I'll be lucky if one of them doesn't cut my throat while I'm asleep.
Outside, Mary paused by Pearl's buggy to wait to say goodbye to her grandmother, who was already coming up from the creek with a handful of roots.
This white man, maybe he is a special white man.
He is a special man. Take good care of him.
I will, little one. You will come back soon?
I will.
It was a greatly relieved brother and uncle who learned that Colt was still alive, although seriously wounded. Bert and Vance had speculated on the possibility that he might be holed up somewhere, wounded, but they had found no clues that might tell them for sure. As each day passed without his appearance, it was difficult to avoid the conclusion that he might be dead. Mary told him of Colt's concealment in the church by Pearl Murray and his subsequent escape to Pearl's house, the events that followed resulting in the killing of young Jeremy Jenkins and Colt's removal to Red Moon's village on Willow Creek.
I knew he was alive somewhere. They'd have damn sure let us know about it if he was dead.
Colt's uncle was feeling the pressure of trying to defend two ranches at the same time. He desperately needed Colt's help, since there was very little he could do to stop Drummond from driving off his cattle. Vance's healing was coming along very slowly, and Bert didn't have the heart to tell him his cattle were scattered all over the prairie now. He had sent Tom and Bill over to Vance's ranch that morning, and they reported back that most of the stock was gone, and the house had been ransacked. At least they didn't burn it down. But Bert was afraid it probably hadn't occurred to him. They might be back.
I was there again yesterday. He's getting much better, but it may be some time before he's fully strong again.
I better go get him. Can you lead me to Red Moon's camp?
I think it would be better if you leave him where he is. My grandmother is taking care of him, and not many people know where Red Moon's village is. He's safer there.
Little Star is right. When he is strong enough, He will come.
Man, she's probably right. Them devils would most likely follow you if you went after him.
Bert nodded to Tom Mosley, reconsidering his first impulse. For the last 2 days, there had always been at least one rider spotted along the high ridge east of the ranch, watching for anyone coming or going. On the two occasions when Bert and Bill Wilkes rode out to confront him, the rider disappeared, only to reappear after they returned to the house.
Anybody see you come in?
I don't think so. It's awfully dark out tonight, no moon, and I was pretty careful.
I see you back home. It ain't safe for a young lady to be riding through these hills alone at night.
I'll be all right, but thanks for the offer. Oh, one thing, though. Colt needs his horse and a rifle. He lost his when he was wounded.
You planning on taking him his horse tonight?
No, I wouldn't have time before morning. I'll take his horse to my mother's tonight, and I'll take it to Colt tomorrow night.
All right. Well, you be mighty careful, young lady. I'll send him one of the rifles we picked up from Drummond's men. And it wouldn't hurt to slap a pistol belt around that dainty little waist of yours while we're at it.
Is the sheriff doing anything at all to stop Drummond's hired killers?
J.D. doesn't seem to want anything to do with the war going on. Roy Whitworth and some members of the town council are growing impatient with him.
Well, I reckon there ain't no doubt which side J.D. Townsend's on.
Nobody doubts that. But I think maybe the town's finally getting tired of it.
Marjorie Taylor opened the door to confront the sinister figure standing there. The tall, gaunt man wearing a long black coat stood smirking at her. His dark, menacing eyes peered out from under the wide brim of a leather hat, seeming to penetrate her brain as he glared at her.
The doctor's with a patient right now. You can wait on the porch. It shouldn't be very long.
Bone's smirk widened into a large grin. He pushed past the astonished woman and walked into the parlor.
Gotta have me a look around.
He then proceeded to walk through the house, looking into every room, opening any doors he found closed to peer around inside the room before moving to the next. When he opened the last door, he discovered Dr. Taylor in the midst of lancing a boil on the backside of one of the town's citizens.
What the hell?
I tried to tell him that—
Shut it!
Bone walked over to the examining table and grabbed the unsuspecting patient by his hair. He jerked his head back sharply. Bone had never laid eyes on Colt, but it was fairly obvious that the frightened little store clerk on the table was not the man he hunted. He let him go.
St. Cole McRae. Where is he?
What do you mean busted in here like this? I'm with a patient. Now get out of here.
You're a feisty one, ain't you?
Bone suddenly thrust a pistol into Taylor's face.
I asked you a question. Now where's Colt McRae?
Colt McRae? I don't know where Colt McRae is.
He was here. Some woman named Pearl brought him here with a gunshot wound.
No, not here. I haven't seen McRae or Pearl. I didn't even know he was shot.
You sure you ain't just lost your memory? Night before last, woman named Pearl brought him here. Late.
Not here, she didn't. Tell him, Marjorie, have I treated Colt McRae for anything?
Bone jerked his head around to glare at the woman, while she confirmed her husband's claims with a nervous shaking of her head. He looked back at Taylor, glowering at him for a few moments before deciding the doctor was probably telling him the truth.
Oh, that lying bitch. I should have shot her instead of that whelp son of hers.
Now a sliver of doubt crept into his mind about the rest of Vera Jenkins' tale. Maybe this Pearl woman hadn't been the one who took McRae away from the church. Done with the doctor, he holstered his pistol and turned toward the door.
Go on back to work, Doc, before this Jasper freezes his ass off.
Figuring that this was as good a time as any to pay a visit to the town of Whiskey Hill, Bone headed his horse toward the little gathering of rough buildings 100 yards away. Drummond had requested that Bone stay away from the town so as not to upset the citizens who lived there. This hunt for McCrae had gone on long enough to start to eat at Bone's pride, and he was determined to end it as quickly as possible. The next step in his search was to tail the woman named Pearl, since she obviously didn't take the wounded man to the doctor. Drummond's man, Brownie, had said Pearl was the cook at the Whiskey Hill Kitchen. There were only two customers in Oscar Anderson's place when Bone walked in. Both turned to gape at the man in the long black coat. Mary, who was behind the counter, knew at once this was a killer who was hunting Colt. She pulled her wits together as quickly as she could manage.
Can I help you?
Bone looked her up and down for a long moment.
Yeah. Give me a cup of coffee.
Coming right up.
Mary went into the kitchen where Pearl was bending over a tub of dirty dishes.
It's him. That killer Drummond hired. He's out there at the counter.
Oh, God.
Mary hurriedly poured a cup of coffee from the pot on the edge of the stove.
He's bound to recognize you. You better stay back here in the kitchen till he's gone.
Pearl nodded, looking around for something to protect herself with. She settled for a large butcher knife. Oscar came into the kitchen.
Who's that sitting at the counter? I ain't seen him before.
That's a son of a bitch that shot Dewey Jenkins' son. Maybe you ought to slip out the back and fetch J.D.
Damn, he's a mean-looking fella, all right. Maybe I had better get the sheriff.
Wasting no time, he went out the back door. Mary looked at Pearl and shook her head with a gesture of dismay, then proceeded with the coffee.
Took you long enough.
Mary could feel his eyes roaming up and down her body as she set the cup down before him. He dumped several heaping spoonfuls of sugar in the black coffee.
You ain't the cook, are you?
Well, sometimes a cook.
Yeah, but your name ain't Pearl, is it?
She didn't have to answer. He was certain that she was not the woman he'd had words with in the church. The woman who had sassed him was a good bit older than this one.
I'm a bit busy in the kitchen. Just holler if you want something else.
Mary left him then to drink his coffee, hoping that Oscar would show up at any minute with the sheriff.
Oh my God, Pearl, that's the most evil-looking man I ever seen in my life.
Both women froze.
Hello, Pearl. Me and you got a little something to talk about.
Now hold on there, mister.
Bone spun around to see Stoney Yates on the other side of the bat wings. Behind him stood Oscar Anderson. Bone stepped back into the dining area.
Who the hell are you?
Now, I'm the law. I need to talk to you about the killing over at Dewey Jenkins' place the other day.
What killing? Who's Dewey Jenkins?
You know damn well what I'm talking about. You shot Dewey's son, Jeremy.
Bone looked the young deputy over.
Was that his name? Yeah, I shot him. I reckon it broke him of the habit of coming after somebody with a shotgun. What are you aiming to do about it?
I'm gonna have to take you in.
Stoney dropped his hand to rest on the handle of his revolver. A fatal mistake. Bone whipped out both of his pistols. Such close range, the shot backed the startled lawman a couple of steps before he crumpled. The sudden violence shocked the already frozen spectators in the establishment. The room was now clutched by an eerie silence as a thin blue cloud of gun smoke floated waist high over Stoney's body. Bone, pistols still drawn, slowly scanned the room, making direct contact with every horrified eye.
Well, everybody in here saw him go for his gun.
Thinking it best never to linger too long at the scene of a killing, however, he holstered his pistols and walked to the door, pausing for only a second to cast a warning glare in Pearl's direction. When he was gone, no one dared move for many long seconds until Mary rushed to Stoney's side.
Somebody go get Dr. Taylor.
No use going for the doctor. He was dead when he hit the floor. Has anybody seen J.D.?
At the moment of his deputy's death, J.D. Townsend was seated in the parlor of Frank Drummond's ranch house. Quickly got to his feet when Drummond entered the room.
Sit down, Sheriff.
Drummond walked across the room to select a cigar from a box on his desk. He did not bother to offer one to his visitor.
What brings you all the way out here, J.D.?
Things are getting a little touchy in town, Mr. Drummond. What I mean is, a lot of the folks are pushing me pretty hard to do something about the trouble out here between you and the McCrays.
It's none of their damn business what goes on between me and the McCrays. Sounds to me like you ain't letting them know who runs things in Whiskey Hill.
Oh, yes, sir. I've been trying to let them know just that, but they're complaining that the trouble is spilling over in town. Especially with that new fella you hired. He walked right in Dewey Jenkins' house and shot his son.
Those people were hiding that murdering Colt McCray. Bones said he had to shoot in self-defense. I thought we had an understanding on what I'm trying to do here, and that you would handle things in town, and I'll take care of the troublemakers like Colt McCray. Now, if you ain't up to the job, maybe it's time we had a talk about that.
Oh, no, sir, it ain't about that. I was just making sure you knew what that man's up to. I mean, I thought you'd want to know. I can handle my job all right.
Good. I thought for a minute you'd lost your nerve.
Oh, no, sir.
All right, then. Anything else you need to talk about?
J.D. shook his head.
Go out into the kitchen. Alice will find you something to eat before you go back.
J.D. did not bother to stop by the kitchen. For once, he didn't have any appetite. Aside from that, he was never comfortable around Drummond's irritable housekeeper anyway. She had never made any attempt to hide her disgust for him. His intention upon riding out to talk to Drummond had been to ask that he put a tighter rein on Bone and confine his activities to the open range outside of town. In Drummond's presence, he lost the courage to argue his case. As he rode out past the gate of the Rocking D, his mind was overtaxed with conflicting thoughts and fears. The town council decided who was sheriff of Whiskey Hill, not Frank Drummond. Yet Drummond had held the entire council in his hand for quite a few years. During the slow ride back to Whiskey Hill, he thought about his future and the future of the town. When he finally arrived at his office, he was no closer to knowing what to do. Seeing Stoney's horse tied at the hitching rail, he was surprised to find his deputy still there so late in the afternoon. Stepping inside his office door, he found Stoney there, but not at the desk. Instead, he was laid out on a blanket on the floor, stone dead.
Jesus God.
J.D. recoiled, seeing his deputy cold and stiff, his eyes gaping wide as if he had stared into the face of death. Stunned, J.D. just stood there staring at the body.
J.D.
He turned to face Roy Whitworth, Raymond Fletcher, Oscar Anderson, and Barney Samuels. They came into the office and crowded around him.
I see you found your deputy. That's the work of your friend Drummond's hired killer. Shot him down in Oscar's place while you were gone somewhere.
I was out to talk to Drummond.
J.D., it's time to pull the reins back on Frank Drummond. This time he's gone too far. If this keeps up, he's gonna destroy our town.
The other members of the council gave nods of support.
We've been discussing the problem all afternoon, and we've decided that it's time to rid the town of Drummond and his gang of killers and thieves. Maybe time to call up the Vigilance Committee again. You being the sheriff, it's your job to take charge of that and see that our laws are enforced.
J.D. had not yet fully recovered from finding Stoney laid out on the floor. He looked at the members of the council, all waiting for his reply. And he thought about his meeting with Drummond.
It ain't gonna be so easy, fighting Drummond. It wasn't but one of you fellas rode with the Vigilance Committee back in 68. The rest of the committee was men from Drummond's ranch. He'll most likely hire on more men if we was to come after him.
Damn it, J.D. He's strangling the town. We've got no choice but to fight for our homes and businesses. And that means Drummond has to be stopped. No more range wars. No more grabbing free-range land. No more killing of livestock and innocent men. Whiskey Hill could be as big as Cheyenne, but not with Frank Drummond holding a gun over the entire town.
All right. I reckon if you've all made up your minds to take on this fight, then I reckon that's the way it's gonna be.
Good, then.
We'll meet at Fletcher's store after supper to organize our plans.
I'll have to ride out to my place now.
He waited until they had all left before turning to take another look at Stoney's corpse in the corner.
I reckon I ought to go tell the Undertaker to come get Stoney.
But he took no action upon it. Walking over to the rack on the wall, he took his extra rifle out and pulled his rain slicker from a peg by the door. Then he took one more look around the room. When Sheriff J.D. Townsend reached the modest cabin he called home, he led his other horse from the small corral and loaded his meager belongings into four packs. When that was done, he looked up at the sky to determine how many hours of daylight remained and satisfied himself that there were maybe a couple. With weary resignation, he climbed back in the saddle and led his pack horse toward the hills to the south. He figured to reach his brother's place southeast of Denver in about a 3 days' ride. Back in Whiskey Hill, while the members of the town council were beginning to gather in Raymond Fletcher's dry goods store, Pearl Murray drove her buggy out of the stable. A lone figure watched from the pine-covered hills above the town. He waited until she took the south trail, then mounted and followed along behind her. After spending the last few nights in the home of Jared Simmons, Mary's father, Pearl was ready to return to her little cabin. She figured that the man called Bone would hardly have the gall to hang around Whiskey Hill after he killed the deputy. And besides, she was damn sure not comfortable in the same house with Jared Simmons. Most of what little bit of money Mary brought in, her father used to buy whiskey. And when he drank, he was a mean drunk, heaping verbal abuse upon his Cheyenne wife and half-breed daughter. Pearl took it as long as she could before telling him he was a sorry son of a bitch who didn't deserve the two women he abused. She was invited to leave. Mary and her mother tried to intercede on Pearl's behalf, but she had no desire to stay in the same house with the no-account drunk and tried to persuade Mary to move in with her. But Mary insisted that she didn't want to leave her mother alone with him.
The no-good son of a bitch.
Pearl shook her head, still thinking of Jared Simmons, as she guided her horse up the narrow trail to her house.
I better see if the rats moved in while I was gone.
Inside, the cabin was dark, with just barely enough light from the windows to keep from bumping into things. Making her way to the kitchen, she lit the lamp on the table.
I need to get a fire going in here.
She turned up the wick in the lamp and left it on the table, turning to the fireplace and the kindling box beside it. Kneeling before the fireplace, she raked some of the old ashes away before placing the kindling, pausing when she suddenly felt a slight breeze across her shoulders as if the back door was open.
Oh, latch must have come undone.
Pearl got up to close it. She turned, but before she could take a step, she staggered back, stunned. An icy hand had suddenly clutched her throat, sending a surge of ice water racing through her veins. He stood there, motionless, watching her, his dark clothes barely distinguishable from the cabin wall behind him. The flickering lamp reflecting from the metal frame of his gun butts were the only points of light. Like the eyes of an evil spirit, they seemed to be damning her. For a long moment, she was helpless to move. A fearless woman who was suddenly met with paralyzing fear.
Where is he?
Pearl said nothing. He took a step toward her.
You have caused me a hell of a lot of trouble, old woman. I know you carried him off. Where is he?
He's dead.
He's dead? Where's his body?
I don't know. Some of the folks from the church took him up in the hills and buried him. I don't know where. They just took him off in the hills.
This was not a possibility Bone had foreseen. His first thought was that he'd been cheated. He looked hard into the woman's eyes. With newfound defiance, she returned his steely gaze, unblinking. Within those few seconds, his mind raced over the trail he had followed to this cabin. McCray had been wounded seriously, judging by the amount of blood he had found. It could have been a mortal wound. Still, Bone could not be totally satisfied until he saw that body.
You old bitch! You're lying to me!
Well, he ain't here, is he?
If you are lying to me...
He was of a mind to put a bullet in the sassy old woman for the trouble she had caused him. She had lied to him from the start, when the man he hunted was right under his damn feet in the church. She could be lying to him now. He pulled one of his pistols and pointed it at her head.
I want that bastard! You're lying, and I don't like liars!
Go ahead, damn you! He'll still be dead!
If I find out you're lying, I might be back to visit you again. Next time, I might not be in such a good mood!
Pearl was afraid to move until she heard his horse pull away from the house. She raced to the door, locked it, and inserted the crossbar.
Lordy mercy, I thought I was done for.
She went to the cupboard to find the bottle she had used when treating Colt's wound.
Damn, I need to drink bad.
Jared Simmons squinted painfully at the plate of food before him. His belly felt as empty as a dry well, but he couldn't eat. Whiskey had made the thought of food sickening to him.
Blue!
Blue was the name he called his wife, shortened from her Cheyenne name meaning blue sky in mourning.
Go into town and fetch me a bottle. I'm hurting.
There is no more money. Mr. Coolidge told me not to come back for whiskey unless I had money to pay for it.
All right, son of a bitch. Tell him to put it on credit, and Mary will pay for it on her next payday.
I did that last week, but he said no.
That was a lie. Mary's meager pay barely covered the cost of food for the three of them. There was no money left over for his whiskey. He shoved the plate away from him and laid his aching head on the table.
I swear, woman, I'm sick. I need my medicine.
Blue gazed at him for a few moments before shaking her head slowly, thinking of the man she had left her father's teepee to marry so many years ago. Her mother had been right about the white man and the white man's fire water. But the union had produced her daughter, Mary, and that was the thought that gave her joy and sustained her. Leaving him there to suffer, she picked up her basket and left to search the cottonwoods by the creek for firewood. Only vaguely aware that his wife had left the house, Jared remained with his head on the table. During past years, when he still had a job with a freighter in Cheyenne, he had spent plenty of his pay in Turk Coolidge's saloon.
Greedy son of a bitch.
Looks like there ain't nobody home but you.
Too miserable to be startled and too sick to be scared, Jared didn't even bother to lift his head.
Whatever you want, we ain't got any. Now get the hell out of my house unless you brought a bottle with you.
Bone was mildly astonished at the man's reaction to an intruder in his house. He guessed then the cause of Jared's malady. Whiskey could do that to a man, if the man was weak enough. He stepped around in front of the table.
I'm looking for a man. Name of Colt McCray. Maybe you might know where he is.
I don't know nothing about no Colt McCray. If I did, I wouldn't tell you.
Huh. Is that a fact?
Drawing his pistol, Bone grabbed Jared by the hair of his head and jerked his head up from the table. With the barrel of the pistol almost touching his nose, Jared's eyes opened wide.
Suppose I tell you, I'm gonna blow a hole in your head if I don't get an answer out of you.
Hold on now. Just hold on a minute. Mister, I swear I don't know where he is.
What if I was to buy you a bottle? Would that help your memory?
despair turned to salvation for an incurable drunk. He still had no notion where Colt McCrae was, but he could not pass on the possibility of a bottle of whiskey. He had to think of something, and the only thing that came to mind was to send this conveyor of doom off someplace far away from here.
Red Moon's camp! Red Moon's camp! It's a Cheyenne camp my wife came from. If they took him someplace, it was most likely there.
Bone lowered the pistol.
How do I get there?
Where's my money?
Not till you tell me where that Cheyenne camp is.
Let me see the money. How do I know you ain't gonna cheat me at it?
Holstering his pistol, Bone took a roll of paper money from his pocket.
This'll buy you enough whiskey to kill you. I'll lay it right there on the table so you can look at it.
Mind you, it's been a spell since I've been back to Red Moon's village, and he don't stay in one place too long. He moves when the grass is grazed up, but he'll always stay somewhere along the same line of hills that rim Bear Basin. That's his hunting ground. He's been moving up and down that trough for as long as I can remember. You'll find him if you scout up and down that basin.
I better, or I'll be back to pay you a little visit.
Jared went on to give Bone directions from the north road out of town to the little stream called Bitter Branch.
You follow that branch northwest for a mile or so, you'll see a table-sized flat rock at the foot of the notch between the hills. That notch will lead you up into the hills to Bear Basin.
Good enough.
Bone turned to leave while Jared eagerly grabbed the money from the table. He took two steps past Jared before drawing the pistol again and striking a hard blow against the back of Jared's skull. Jared fell to the floor unconscious. Bone reached down and took the money from Jared's hand. Colt led the buckskin gelding down to the creek to drink. He was not fully recovered from the loss of blood, but he could feel himself getting stronger each day, thanks to the meat stew that Walking Woman forced upon him two or three times a day. The bullet wound in his side was healing nicely, although there was still a small amount of blood on the bandage whenever the old woman changed it. Reaching for the saddle sling, he drew the rifle his uncle had sent with his horse. It was a Winchester 73, just like the one he had lost. Still, it wouldn't ease the disappointment he felt over losing his own rifle, because that rifle had belonged to his father, and his father had specifically willed it to him. He hadn't had a chance to test his new weapon, so he pulled it up to his shoulder now to get the feel of it. It had been a week since he had dropped off the face of the earth, and he was anxious to get back. Concerned over what his uncle and brother might be encountering with Drummond's men, he harbored a feeling of guilt for having been shot. Mary came to visit him a couple of times during the week, but she couldn't tell him what was happening between his family and Drummond. And as each day passed, he became more and more worried.
Yeah, it's time to go, Buck.
At sundown, Colt led the gelding as he sought out Red Moon and Walking Woman to thank them for their kindness. Walking Woman seemed genuinely sad to see him leave. She embraced him with an awkward hug, taking care not to squeeze his ribs.
Too soon, dark soon, wait till morning.
It's best for me to ride at night.
Nanosehame, come back. Stay with us again.
Nanosehame?
Colt looked at Walking Woman for help.
New name. Good. Good.
Nanosehame.
He nodded again, hoping to remember it, but he was distracted when he saw that a rider was approaching.
That's Mary.
Mary prodded her father's reluctant sorrel for more speed when she saw Colt.
Colt! You gotta get out of here!
In the firelight, Colt could see the concern etched in Mary's face, and he came forward to meet her.
Thank God you're still alive. We gotta go at once. That monster is on his way here.
He knows about this place?
She hurriedly told him of Bone's visit to her father's house, and that her father had told Bone that Colt was in Red Moon's village.
My father had no idea where you were. He just said you were here so he could get money for whiskey. Bone's not gonna stop until he finds you. Pearl came to work this morning and said he followed her home last night. She thought he was gonna kill her if she didn't tell him where you were. She told him you were dead, but he showed up at my house and my father told him you were here.
Colt's first thought was to wait for the determined killer right there in the Cheyenne village. He was as eager to settle with Bone as the determined assassin was to kill him.
You've got to get out of here. He's coming to kill you. If you don't care about yourself, think about my grandmother's people. These old men and women are not warriors. If the shooting starts here, innocent people will be killed.
She was right. It wouldn't be fair to bring Bone's wrath down on these innocent Cheyenne. It occurred to him then that to wait for Bone here would also place Mary in harm's way.
If you're not here, he may search the village, but when he doesn't find you, he'll go on his way. Maybe he'll think you really are dead.
Colt considered the possibility that Bone might do harm to someone, even if he didn't find him. Bone probably wouldn't chance an arrow in his back, though, if he was surrounded by Indians.
All right, mount up. I'll take you home. Walking Woman, Red Moon, thank you again.
Goodbye, Nanosahami.
They splashed through the shallow creek and disappeared into the darkness. Since she was more familiar with the trail back to Whiskey Hill, Mary led the way as they galloped through the trough that served as the passage from Bear Basin. Once clear of the gulch, they stopped at Bitter Branch since Mary's horse had already been ridden pretty hard. They sat and watched the horses drink from the shallow stream. With the soft night enveloping them, they felt the sense of urgency fading considerably.
We'll let the horses rest for a while. We drove them pretty hard through that gulch. Mary, I've been thinking about how much I owe you, and Pearl, too, for sticking your neck out to help me. I just can't figure out why you're taking the chances you had to help an ex-convict that everybody else is either trying to kill or run out of town.
If he had not concentrated his gaze on the bank between his feet, he might have seen the warm smile on her face.
Anyway, I want you to know how much I appreciate what you've done for me.
Colt McCray, if I thought you really did shoot that bank guard or had anything to do with it, I wouldn't be lifting a finger to help you.
I thank you for that.
Evidently, old Red Moon took a liking to you. I heard him call you Mountain Lion.
Mountain Lion? I thought it meant good. At least, that's what Walking Woman said.
No, he called you Mountain Lion.
It was a good name for him. There was something in his manner that suggested the savage strength of the Mountain Lion.
You should be honored. Red Moon doesn't think much of white men in general.
He thought about what she said for a few moments, finding no words to express his feelings on the matter.
Well, I reckon the horses are rested enough.
He reached down to help her up, taking her arm when she extended it. Light as a feather, she came up a little too fast and fell against him, remaining there for a few seconds before regaining her balance. He quickly released her arm, but the sensation of her body pressed against his, if only for that moment, reminded him how long it had been since he had felt the touch of a woman. It was just past midnight when Colt and Mary reached Mary's home. Colt turned Jared Simmons' horse out in the corral and returned to the house. Blue Sky joined him.
What are you planning to do now, Colt?
I guess I'll go on out to my uncle's place. Ought to get there by sunup.
Colt, you must be hungry. I'll find you something to eat.
There's no need for that. I won't put you to the trouble.
Oh, no trouble.
You need to build your strength. Mind my mother. Mothers know best.
All right, if you're sure you don't mind.
Mary fried some bacon while her mother freshened the fire in the stove before placing a cake of cornbread on the edge to warm. Colt hadn't realized he was hungry until the sharp aroma of the frying pork filled his nostrils. There was still coffee left in the pot from supper as well, so Colt graciously sat down at the table. When the food was ready, Mary sat down across from him to watch him eat.
What's he doing here?
Asleep until moments before, when the aroma of bacon awakened him, Jared Simmons stumbled out of the bedroom, a rag bandage wrapped around his head. The gash had covered the result of Bones' parting blow.
He brought me home. I just fixed him a little something to eat before he leaves.
Oh, yeah! Food's cheap enough! Might as well feed every saddle tramp that knocks on the door, huh?
Colt held his tongue, not wishing to cause any trouble for Mary or her mother. The belligerent drunk glared at him.
You're that son of a bitch everybody's looking for, ain't you? And you're sitting at my table eating my food. Mister, you can get your sorry ass out of here right now.
Mary jumped to her feet in alarm.
You sit down!
Jared, I asked him to eat. Mary paid for the food. She can give it to who she wants.
Jared lashed out with a backhand to his wife's face, knocking her back in her chair.
Don't you ever tell me who eats food in my house.
He drew his hand back to strike her again. Like the mountain lion for which he had recently been named, Colt sprang from his chair, knocking it across the kitchen floor. Before Jared's hand could strike again, Colt caught it in an iron grip and with one violent move, slammed Jared against the wall, bouncing his head on the plank.
Yeah, damn you. I'm the son of a bitch everybody's looking for. And I'm the son of a bitch who's gonna string your guts on the clothesline if I ever hear you hit one of these women again.
Colt wrapped his head sharply against the wall again.
Do we have an understanding on that? Because I don't like cowards who beat women, and I'd just as soon shoot your cowardly ass as look at you.
He released him then, and Jared slid down the wall to sit dazed on the floor.
Come, Jared. I will help you back to bed. You'll be all right in the morning.
She pulled her husband's arms but couldn't budge the stunned man. Colt reached down and, grabbing him by the back of his collar, pulled him up on his feet. Jared stared straight ahead in bewildered silence.
Come, Jared.
Colt, his rage still simmering, watched the belligerent man until he was out of the room. Only then, able to calm himself, he turned to Mary.
You'll be all right?
I think so. Oh, Colt, your wound's bleeding again.
Colt looked down at the deerskin shirt walking woman had given him to replace the one ruined by his gunshot. Blood had begun to seep through the bandage.
I guess I pulled it apart. He'll stop soon.
Walking over to pick up the chair he had knocked over, he pushed it up to the table.
I'll be going now. Tell your mother I'm obliged for the food.
Where will you go?
I'll go to the Broken M tonight. I expect they're wondering where I am.
Colt, be careful.
Careful as can be expected.
I wonder if my feelings for him are getting too strong. That could be a bad mistake with a man like that. Phew. Pearl would certainly tell me that quick enough.
Brownie Brooke sat close to the fire while he strained his eyes to examine the wound in his leg. He picked at a little pocket of pus that had formed on one end of the wound.
Bad business. Might have had a chance to heal up proper. Mr. Drummond could have let me rest it like the doctor said.
Unhappy with the job he'd been given to keep an eye on the Broken M Ranch house, he crowded even closer to his small campfire.
What in the hell could a man see out here in the dark anyway? Hell, I couldn't see a dozen riders from this ridge at night.
The ridge, some 500 or 600 yards from Burt McCray's ranch house, was as close as Brownie dared to get. Even that was too close to suit him. A man who was half good with a rifle could pick him off at that distance. For that reason, he intended to move back a couple of hundred yards before sunup. Finishing with picking at his wound, he made himself as comfortable as he could and pulled his blanket over him.
Ain't nobody coming or going this time of night.
In less than a quarter of an hour, he was asleep. An hour before sunrise, his snores still resonated off the chill night breeze as he slept the peaceful sleep of the simple-minded, unaware of the man quietly walking into his camp. Pausing to look at the sleeping form for a brief moment, Colt recognized him as the man he had shot in the leg. He reached down and picked up the rifle resting across the saddle. Brownie did not awaken. Colt stepped around him and walked over to Brownie's horse. Removing the hobbles from the horse's fetlocks, he led the obedient animal away. Tom Mosley came out of the bunkhouse to spot a rider approaching, leading a horse. He squinted against the sunrise for a moment until the rider reached the creek and he identified the visitor.
Colt! Colt! It's Colt!
He was soon joined by Bill Wilkes, followed in a few seconds by Bert coming out of the house. They waited on the porch to greet his nephew as he walked the horses up.
Where'd you get the extra horse, Colt?
From a feller back there on the ridge. He wasn't using them.
That's a long walk back to Drummond's Ranch toting a saddle.
Especially with a bad leg.
Lord knows you are a sight for sore eyes. How's the wound coming along?
The wound's healing fine. Walking woman took great care of me. My ribs are hurting me the most now. Sorry I had to leave you shorthanded.
Well, come on in the house. Reno will fix you some breakfast.
Inside, they were joined by Vance and Susan. Colt was disappointed to see how slowly his brother was recovering from his wound, but he had not been counting on Vance's gun in the business to be concluded with Frank Drummond anyway.
Have there been any more raids since I've been gone?
No. They've been satisfied with just sitting on that ridge up there and watching us. I think Drummond ain't got enough men left to do any real fighting. They plundered Vance's place, but at least they didn't burn it down. We're just too thin to cover both houses is the problem.
What about the sheriff? Has he done anything about it, one way or the other?
Hell, there ain't no sheriff. That gunman Drummond hired shot Stoney Yates, and J.D. cut out and headed for who knows where.
Well, I reckon that wasn't much of a loss for the town.
What are you aiming on doing now?
I'm thinking I'd best get back to that Cheyenne camp. Mary's pa told that gunman of Drummond's that I was there. He's been looking all over creation for me, and I think it's time he found me. Then I reckon we gotta settle this fight with Drummond.
When the early rays of the sun lit upon his face, Brownie Brooks stirred briefly before shifting his body, looking for a more comfortable position. Still half asleep, he reached down to pull his blanket up closer around his shoulders, only then remembering that he planned to move his camp back from the ridge before full daylight descended.
Oh, damn.
Reluctantly, he sat up and poked around in his campfire in an effort to rekindle a flame.
Damn it, it's cold.
It occurred to him that there was no sound from his horse. Knowing the horse wouldn't be far away, he looked all around him.
Well, where the hell?
He caught sight of his hobbles lying on the ground some 20 feet away.
What?
He reached for his rifle. It wasn't there.
Damn!
He jumped up and looked all around him on the ridge. There was no one in sight. He strained to see down the ridge toward the ranch house he'd been watching. He could see no activity yet there either. Knowing he'd better not linger on this spot, lest Bert McCray and one of his hands decide to ride out again to challenge him, he hurriedly picked up his belongings and hefted his saddle up on his shoulder.
Doesn't make any sense.
He started walking as fast as he could manage under his burden.
Indians? That don't hardly figure since I still got my scalp. No. Somebody from the Broken Am has to have had a hand in this. How in the hell am I going to explain this to Mr. Drummond?
The sun was just beginning to climb above the hills as Brownie trudged along. The load of his saddle was already rubbing a sore spot on his shoulder, and he limped, favoring his wounded leg. He jerked his head around to look behind him. A new panic arose when he saw a man astride a big buckskin, casually content to follow along behind him. He dropped everything on the ground. He reached for the pistol on his side. Once it was free of the holster, he hesitated to raise it, realizing there was a Winchester aimed at him. He was a dead man if he raised that weapon. Easing it back in the holster, he decided the odds were better if he begged for his life. He sat down on the saddle.
I reckon you got the drop on me. You got no call to shoot me. I wasn't killing no cattle or nothing. I just camped for the night. I wasn't doing no harm to nobody.
Is that a fact? I figure you've been spying on the Broken M. This is war, and spies are shot during wartime.
Whoa! Now, wait a minute, mister. I ain't no spy.
Then what the hell are you doing on McCray Range?
Wait, damn it! I'm just a hired hand. I got no quarrel with you or your uncle.
Is that so? I've been looking at that rifle I picked up this morning, and I'm thinking it's the rifle that put a bullet in my father's back. Somebody's got to pay for that.
Colt brought the rifle up, the barrel pointing at Brownie's face.
Wait! Wait, mister! I swear, I ain't never shot nobody. I went anywhere around when your pa got shot.
That may be, but somebody's got to pay for it. You're the one that got dealt the losing hand.
Colt brought the Winchester up to his shoulder.
But I know who did it.
All right. You got about 2 minutes to tell me what you know. If it doesn't sound right to me, you're on your way to hell.
God's honest truth. Me and Lon Branch rode over to the Bar M and waited while Mr. Drummond rode in to talk to your pa. Well, Mr. Drummond came back. He was madder than a hornet. He grabbed Lon's rifle and went back about 200 yards or more. When your pa rode out, Mr. Drummond cut down on him. I ain't ever seen Mr. Drummond dirty his hand like that before or after.
That's the story you want to take to your maker?
It's the truth, I swear it. Please don't kill me, mister. Let me go and I'll ride out Wyoming territory right now.
Colt continued to fix his gaze on the defeated man's face. He brought the rifle up to his shoulder again. The doomed man's eyelids began to flutter uncontrollably as Colt took deliberate aim. Terrified, Brownie braced himself for the shot.
Shit!
If I see you around here again, I'll kill you.
Colt dropped the reins to Brownie's horse and tossed his empty rifle on the ground.
You ain't gonna get the chance to kill me. I've had enough.
Frank Drummond scowled at the three men left to run his ranch as they stood nervously waiting for his orders. He hadn't slept well. Frustration had kept his mind churning with the anguish of seeing his once invincible gang of men reduced to these three sorry specimens standing before him. For a man accustomed to the conqueror's role, this was excruciating. What troubled him most was whether Colt was alive or dead. Rafe was half convinced that McCray had been mortally wounded in the ambush on his buckboard. Bone had not returned to collect his money, and Drummond was determined not to pay him a damn cent without positive proof of Colt's demise. Drummond was anxious to move on Bert McCray. Young Vance's ranch had been abandoned, and both families were holed up at the Broken M. Had Drummond not lost so many men, he would already have sent in a half dozen guns to claim the Bar M. But with only three, he couldn't spare any of them when he moved against Bert McCray. It had to be a complete victory, with no one left to talk about it, man, woman, or child. He would prefer to know for certain that Colt McCray was not out there somewhere waiting. He decided to wait one more days for news from Bone.
Rafe, ride on out to Broken M and relieve Brownie. He's probably bellyaching already about being out there all night. And Rafe, take some grub, because you're going to be there all night. You keep a sharp eye. I want to know who's coming and who's going, because tomorrow I'm going to make him an offer he ain't going to turn down this time.
What do you want us to do about the stock, Mr. Drummond? We got cattle straying all over hell and then some.
During the past week, Rocking D cattle were finding their way onto Bar M and Broken M land. It had become more than Drummond's skeleton crew could control.
We'll worry about that next week. It won't matter where they stray then. They'll still be on my land.